Welcome back to Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
All right, now comes your test. Mm-hmm. Okay, no more fooling around. We did the casual brunch, relaxed, heavy, make you take a nap. We did the sort of terrific game day, you know, snacky, easy, filling autumnal, late lunch, supper. But let's have a little more serious dinner party and focus on the ingredients from the season right now. The season now and what's coming up for the sake of planning. So people walk in the door and you hand them a glass of champagne, let's say, or you hand them spiced cider, as you suggested. What are the hors d'oeuvres? What are the snacks that should be out in the season?
I think with that, apple beignets would be amazing. So if you are up to frying something, you could do a very simple beignet batter, which would be sparkling water, cake flour, egg whites, and a little bit of salt. And I would put a little bit of sugar in.
And a pretty tart apple, like a Granny Smith or
exactly,
something.
Exactly. Something that's going to hold its body as well.
As texture and will have some snap.
Right. So you could do apple beignets. I would absolutely have oysters on the half shell. There's no question. This is a time, you know, we are coming up on great oyster season. So especially if you're having champagne and you said warm cider. So I think the apple goes with that and then the champagne and the oysters.
Oysters, but is there a garnish? Is there something that you want on the oyster?
You could put a little bit of caviar on there if you were really doing fancy, or a little julienne cucumber. Or you could put a little bit of finely shaved fennel on there and lime. There are a million things you could put on there, actually.
Yeah, so it's funny. As much as I like themes, I'm thinking, is there an apple theme that can go all the way through this menu? Because I have apples in the brain, you know? Is this some kind of like, almost like a mignonette sauce where it's
apples,
where it's half like
cider vinegar
and Granny Smith and half shallot and cider vinegar and the
pepper.
Cracked black pepper.
Right. Yeah, that would be fun.
That might be kind of a...
And then I was thinking for the first course, a walnut and pear soup. And I just think that could be so pretty and not heavy.
So this is a warm soup.
Yes. Yes. And if it was still hot, you could do a gorgeous chilled pear soup. Chilled pear.
And the pears are good this year too.
Yeah, they are really
good.
The
first bartlets coming are very
and
tasty.
I wouldn't cook
really
them.
Buttery and nice.
Yeah, as long as they're really ripe, I would just peel them and immediately put them into a little bit of sugar and lime juice. Peel and chop, put them into sugar and lime, and then I would put those in the blender, add a little bit of creme fraiche, and I might even put in one or two nectarines if I still had them. If they're not available, then no worries. But plums. And you might have a couple of plums hanging around. Plums will also just
Italian
sort
plums.
Of,
the blue plums will be around.
That
for,
would be really good.
Weeks.
Italian blue plums and the pears and the lime and the little bit of sugar and a little bit of creme fraiche. That would make a beautiful chilled soup. If you wanted to do a warm soup, you could just again very gently saute shallots and butter. And then add all the pears, and I would add water and a little bit of spices in a sachet so that I could pull them out. So I'd add the star anise and cinnamon stick and a little bit of clove and just tie it up in cheesecloth and with string and leave it in, and then add a little bit of port, a little bit of red wine and water and those spices and let the fruit cook. And then I would puree that with a little bit of toasted walnuts in at the end in the blender and then strain it. You may want to strain it a couple of times because you're going to have fibrous material from the pears as well as obviously from the walnuts.
And you have to deal with the walnuts, yeah.
But you can make a really pretty pear and walnut soup with the spices.
Do you toast the walnuts a little bit first to get some oil?
If they're not nice and crispy, I would toast them a little bit. You know, once you smell them, then they should be out.
Yeah, no, once they're warm enough to smell, then the oil's coming to the surface. That's
right. And that could be really pretty. And you could even drizzle a little creme fraiche on the top of that soup. Or you could do a little bit of an oil on top of the soup. Maybe, I don't know, something. Actually, nothing's coming to mind. But you could definitely perfume it with something. Even if it was rosemary oil, it wouldn't be that far off from...
Yeah, I almost wonder if you want something that's a little bit savory to... to balance it, to kind of like give a little tiny bit of an edge to it.
Well, the walnut soup shouldn't have any. I mean, the walnut and pear soup is only going to have its own natural sugars, whereas the chilled soup, I might add some sugar.
But there's still some.
Yeah, there would be some sugar. Right. Well, yeah, as you said, the pears are great this year. So,
if you're using ripe pears, you're going to have plenty of sugar. Mm-hmm. If you pulled it back a little bit, maybe sage. Mm. You know, maybe a sage oil or something like that.
Okay.
Pull it back a little bit. I'm just thinking about it. What in the world to do for a wine match to deal with the residual sugar? You have to use some fermented, dry but overripe Riesling from Austria, like one of the wines from Herzberger or something.
For the hot soup or the cold soup?
For the hot soup.
Okay.
Soup is a hard enough match to begin with. For the chilled, you can just keep drinking the champagne. It's going to be okay.
That sounds good. Yeah, I like that.
You know, if you know you're going into a soup that's a little bit sweet, then you just choose a champagne that's a little bit sweeter, you know, moussier style.
And I like the idea of going from that course, even if it's the cold soup or the hot soup, going into a lentil salad course. And lentils cook relatively quickly. So if you get the French green lentils, they cook in about 30 to 40 minutes. And I would just cook them in a good chicken stock, or if you don't eat meat, just in a vegetable stock or a stock with a little bit of aromatic herbs and water. And let that work. And then the moment they're done, you do not want to overcook lentils. You want them to still be, you want them to be al dente, firm to the bite for sure. And then drain them and rinse them. And you want to get the starch off and then toss them in aged cherry vinegar, a little bit of gently butter poached, finely chopped garlic, a little bit of finely chopped and sauteed shallot. I wouldn't put any of those things in there raw. And a little bit of good olive oil and probably a tiny bit of corn oil too, just so you don't blow out the flavor with too much extra virgin olive oil. And a little bit of finely chopped parsley or chives, whichever you prefer. And just make this, you know, crazy good green lentil cold salad. And you could always garnish it with arugula, baby arugula or full size arugula, a little bit of frisée or mizuna or a chiffonade of spinach if you wanted something that was really healthy in there. But lentils just love a lot of things.
That's what I always want with beans. That sounds tasty. What I always want with beans are mushrooms. I want mushrooms or rice. And it's kind of like, if it's a course, then we'd get this beautiful flageolet. And that, to me, they just always beg chanterelle mushrooms. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the way that you have to work chanterelle is a long time. You know, long time, long time.
Yeah, you have to be very patient to develop flavors.
To get them as fruity and woodsy as they should be. And flageolet, it's almost as though, like, you have to get your chanterelles done. You're talking about working in, like, in a big copper pan for an hour and a half, I swear, at least, to get chanterelles where they should be. And when they're where they should be, then you can add butter and a little shallot or something like that. But with these, it was just a decent amount of shallot, no garlic. And then the flageolet, the last 35 minutes or so, just fresh, that's hard to say, fresh flageolet, you know, from the, sort of look like big, funny, skinny green beans. You pop those green guys out of there. And just cook them in vegetable stock. I had vegetable stock that was very mushroomy and had a tiny little bit of soy to it. And I doctored that stock with a little bit of duck bacon, a carrot, and some shallot to cook the beans. And then they went in with the mushrooms at the end when they had finished. And with just a little bit of that stock. And that can work as a soup if you want to use more of the stock. But I'm imagining it functioning as that kind of cold course.
Mm-hmm.
And having those fruity, you'd have to make a vinaigrette, though. You know, have you used chanterelles in a cold application like
no,
that?
No, I haven't. I've never served chanterelles cold.
I wonder if you could almost lightly pickle them.
Sure.
To handle a salad like that. But I think you could just serve it as a warm course.
Yeah.
It was for me, it was for a piece of really rich salmon. But which was very happy with a bottle
great.
Of red burgundy, but but I could easily imagine having it as its own standalone course and as a warm course in that same kind of an application where you're doing a starch, but it's not a pasta and it's not a, you know, noodle or something like that.
Well, I was kind of thinking about game birds for the last course of a, mm-hmm. you know, and I really would like to use, that's why didn't put mushrooms with that, with the lentils, because I was thinking about seps as we were talking about them earlier, and I'd really, really, really like to have a pheasant with seps. I just, you know, when pheasant is another lean bird.
Pheasant's so tricky to cook.
Oh my gosh, you have to be so careful. I always put bacon underneath the skin between the breast meat and the skin meat on the pheasant, because it needs that kind of self-basting situation. And gosh, if there's any pheasant, fat at all on the bird, do not cut it off, because it needs every bit it can possibly get, because it is going to dry out very quickly.
And it needs all the basting it can get.
And I would marinate. Honestly, I would even marinate it ahead of time. I would probably put it in some, you know, again, we always talk about not wasting extra virgin olive oil, but I would probably put it in a pretty good flavored extra virgin, and definitely salt, pepper, definitely some thyme, rosemary. I'd probably put bay leaf in there. I'd put heavy pepper in there, because it needs some attention. But pheasant is a delicious bird, but you just have to kind of really pamper it in order to cook it.
It's not strongly flavored.
No, it's mild.
And
it's
really
mild.
Lacks fat.
I almost think it might even be less flavorful than chicken, which is kind of hard to believe, but in a way it is.
It's more delicately flavored.
It is delicate. Yeah. And but I love pheasant, and I just think it would be so wonderful with some beautifully sautéed seps or puccini mushrooms. And I would definitely like some caramelized shallots on that, and maybe even some sautéed leeks.
Pheasant, you're talking about the whole pheasant.
Yeah, I would roast the whole bird.
That's so tricky because the breast and the legs are so different.
Mm-hmm. Well, you could always take the breasts off and roast or grill them, and then confit the leg, and that's always a good idea.
Confit pheasant legs are really
good.
And
then you can make stock from the carcass. So, you know, if you do decide to do it that way, you don't want to roast the whole bird, that's what I would do. I would confit the legs, cut off the breast from the bone, make your stock, have that going first, and then I would consider grilling the breasts after they had marinated for at least a couple of hours, if not overnight.
The combination with the seps is inspiring to me. I think that if you had the heavy enough pan to slow roast that breast on the rib cage with the seps and whatever herbs you're going to use, mm-hmm. I think that could be unbelievable.
Well, and that's another one of those times where if you are going to do a one pot dish where you're roasting the bird and then you're adding, you know, the mushrooms to the pan, you know, I would definitely just go ahead. I love stuffing so much. I can't help myself. You know, that's the kind of thing where at the end I would probably add a dice of some sort of bread, whether it was baguette or brioche.
Make the stuffing in the roasting pan.
Yeah, and you have those mushrooms in there, and you could put a little bit of extra bacon in there at the end, throw in a sprig of rosemary to perfume it, maybe a little small dice of celery, and certainly some onions, or you could use cipollini onions in there that you had already roasted and kind of chopped up. I mean, that would be really, really amazing. And you could put walnuts in there at the end, or pecans if you prefer, really make a sort of like a pan stuffing there at the end with the porcinis. That could be very pretty.
So let's recap the menu, and I didn't know you were headed towards pheasant. My brain was just on the flageolet with the chanterelles, but that's too deep, dark a flavor for that pheasant. So lentils make sense for the pheasant.
Especially with the sherry vinegar, it's kind of bright and tart on your palate, and yeah.
And the pear soup with walnuts warm, not sweet.
Yeah, not the sweet one, right.
Makes sense in sequence. Yes. And you have hot, cold, and you have a little bit sweet, and you have a little bit tart, and then you have rich, especially if you have the stuffing.
My favorite is that version.
If you have the confit.
The next course should be.
Of the legs.
Yeah.
And then you have the breasts with the, you know, you have a platter with the breasts and the seps and the stuffing and the confit legs.
Hmm.
That's pretty ridiculous.
Yeah.
So what's for sweets?
Oh, I just think a really good tart. I mean, I know it's not brainstorming, but just I love frangipane so much. And to have that sort of almond paste, wonderful goodness, and, you know, again, brings in the nut aspect.
You've already used your pears.
Right. My gosh, you're right. So, yeah. Well, it could be apples. We haven't used apples. What else is there? Plums. Well,
I was thinking,
you can make a plum tart.
I was thinking you were going to use them.
Actually, plum tarts would be those Italian plums. Oh my gosh. Oh, yeah. Roasted in the oven. Well, you don't need frangipane then. I would just make a plum tart, and I would probably stew them a tiny bit before I put them in the tart shell so that you have star anise in with it. And
they're pretty sharp. You could stew them with a little bit of sweet wine.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
Your menu is kind of leaning to the southwest of France, so you could kind of, you know, you could use a little Pastrank de Vigbil or even Sauternes if you wanted something jazzy and stew them with that a little bit.
And then let those roast in the oven in a good tart shell, a good sweet pastry tart shell.
The wine for that pheasant dish, you want great big white wine, White Hermitage. And this is obviously a blowout meal. White Hermitage would be fantastic to have with that. Of course, you could have a great big bottle of white Burgundy. You could have one of the really lavish Chardonnays, one of the luxury Chardonnays being produced in California these days by Marc Aubert or Peter Michael or someone like that. But my heart would be with the Hermitage Blanc, a little drier, a little firmer. And then with the whatever the sweet wine is that you're serving, that you stew the plums with, the older version of that, the more mature version of that, that to me is the interesting thing to have to finish that menu.
With the tart.
Exactly.
That would be great.
Well,
okay.
If you'd like to download this broadcast or any other broadcast of Foreman & Wolf from WIPR, please go to the WIPR website and WIPR.org. If you'd like to email us with questions or comments, it's ForemanWolf@WIPR.org. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And a fellow Chef Cindy Wolf.
On Twitter at Chef Cindy Wolf or on Instagram at Chef Wolf.
And thanks for listening.